Welcome to Talkin' Music. I'm Allie Lightfoot. American songwriter and humorist Loudon Wainwright III performed at the Rocky Mountain Folk Fest last summer. KVNF DJ Paige Blank had the opportunity to speak with Loudon after his show. Stay tuned for that interview. But first, the song So Much to Do off Wainwright's 2007 release, Strange Weirdos.
Well, there's not much to say. But there's so much to do. I'm in a good way since I've fallen for you. We'd be so happy, I know that we would. If only you'd have me, I know that we could. Not much to say, but then there's so much to do. If I got to choose, and the fates had to obey, I'd stop with these blues when I get this way. Love was always a curse, a thirst and a sin.
I'm Paige Blank with KVNF Community Radio here in Lyons, Colorado for the Rocky Mountain Folks Festival with Loudon Wainwright III.
What a mouthful, huh?
Yeah, you're the third one.
I am the third Loudon. Can you imagine what my middle name is?
What is your middle name?
Man, Snowden.
Loudon Snowden Wainwright III. That is quite the name.
What an annoying
name.
It rolls
off the tongue, though.
Well, kind of. It stumbles off the tongue.
I liked a lot of things about your show tonight. You had me laughing almost the whole time, as well as so many other people around me. But I love the story of your father and his column at Life magazine and how you're weaving that narrative through your latest creative endeavors. Mm-hmm. So let's dive into the meat of that backstory. What inspired you to do that? And yeah, tell me more about that.
Well, my dad had a column in Life magazine throughout the 1960s and 70s and 80s called The View From Here. And when I was a kid in the 60s, he was famous. I was the son of the famous Life magazine columnist because we had the same name, too. I mean, people would say, oh, you must be which got to be a little annoying. But the columns were widely read, and although some of them I didn't even bother reading, probably because I was a rebellious teenage son. Mm-hmm. But about 5 years, my dad died in 1988. So about 5 years ago, I was in Maine, and I was staying in an old kind of cabiny thing with an old magazine, wooden magazine rack, and there were some Life magazines in there. I pulled out a Life magazine, and sure enough, it was from 1971, and there was one of my dad's columns, one that I did know about and remember, and I performed it tonight, the one about the dog. Mm-hmm. And it's a very beautiful, moving, funny, great piece of writing. And I read it in Maine, and I was just so moved by it. I thought, wouldn't it be interesting to kind of take some of his writing and combine and connect it with some of my songs. So I have an actual show called Surviving Twin, which I perform from time to time, which is all of that. It's seven of his columns and a bunch of my songs and this films and pictures and things. But when I do a regular show like today, I often will do a couple of the columns.
And I love that story. And for KVNF listeners that weren't here for that, it's a really touching story about a dog. And you start the column with the death of the dog.
Yeah.
And then you tell the whole story about the dog. Your father does. It's your father's words are coming out from you on the stage. What does it feel like to be reciting essentially his writing from his glorious writing career?
It feels great. I mean, it's, as I refer to it, it's a kind of a posthumous collaboration where, you know, we didn't have a great relationship, to be honest. I mean, he was busy and I was, you know, a teenager, and, you know, we had that alienation thing going on. But, I wasn't close with my father, and he's been dead now for over 25 years. So when I do one of his pieces, I feel very excited and close to him, and I love the idea that an audience will hear his beautiful writing and be affected by it. So it's great. I love doing it.
Can you talk a little bit about the song that you played right after you read his story on the stage here in Lyons?
Right, that's a song called Man and Dog. It's about me and my dog, who's unfortunately no longer with us also, a dog called Harry. And it's more of a funny song. So I'll take, you know, I'll do one of his columns, and then I'll try to find the right song to connect. And that's a good example of how that can work. So it kind of cheers the audience up at the end, I think.
Yeah, I love that song. I just want to belt out In the City.
In the City, yes.
It's hard to have a dog in the city.
It is.
And I've been there picking up a from the sidewalk.
Yes.
With the bag and the cigarettes.
Yeah.
And the slushy snow.
You've done it all.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's something people can relate to in that urban life.
When a man has a dog in the city, a man needs to walk in the park. By the riverside, smoke a cigarette there in the dark, living in a city. Man living with a dog. And a man has to carry him a plastic bag on his person at all times. When a dog dumps on the sidewalk, walking away is a crime, living in the city. Man walking with a dog. Man likes living in the city, but a man has to find some work. Walking with a dog is a kind of a job, make you feel like a fool and a jerk, living in the city. Working like a dog. Work out.
Dog likes living in the city. In the city there's a lot of other mutts. Chicken in front, chicken in back. No ifs, no ands, just buts. Living in the city. Dog checking on a dog. It's a pretty good way to meet a woman. If a woman is walking a dog, you just say, what's her name? How old is she? It's easy like rolling off a log, checking out a woman. Man acting like a dog. But when a man has a fight with a woman, a man needs to go for a walk. Walking with a dog is easy. He listens, he don't talk. Talking to a dog. Talk to me. Walking with a dog in the winter in the wind and the rain and the snow is a drag. It's hard as hell to keep a cigarette lit and get in the plastic bag. Living in the city. Man walking with a dog. When a man has a dog in the city, stroll by the riverside, smoke a cigarette there in the dark, living in the city. Man living with a dog.
That was the song Man and Dog from Loudon Wainwright III. KVNF's Paige Blank spoke with Wainwright after his performance at the 2017 Rocky Mountain Folk Fest.
So how does it work creatively with this posthumous collaboration that you're doing? Have you've written these songs before and you find the column to marry with an old song? Are you writing any new tunes to pair with the old writing?
In the show, most of the songs, I guess Man and Dog is probably the most, that was probably written 3 years ago. And that's probably the most recent song. Some of the songs go back, you know, I've been writing songs since 1969, so it's, God, it's almost 50 years. So there's some very old songs that are combining with his stuff, and it's mostly older material.
And how does that work? As your father's son, I'm sure that you see part of him coming out in yourself throughout your life. Do you think that really comes to light when you're trying to find your perfect song to pair with whatever writing you're choosing, whatever column you're drawn to of his?
Well, I don't know. I mean, you know, as you get older, I mean, I'm 70. I'm almost 71. You know, when you're young, you don't want to be like your parents. And I'll do anything but be like my parents. And now as what I find now is that I'm closer and closer to my father. And I'm very, it's almost like aside from the fact that we have the same name, we went to the same boarding school. We have this ring, which I also gave to my son, Rufus.
This ring is, it's on Loudon's pinky.
Yeah.
It's a gold flat ring. Tell me about the sigil there.
Well, it's a signet ring, and it's a lion who's got I guess it's some kind of a hatchet. He's sticking out his tongue, and he's stamping his leg, so I think that's pretty cool. And I think that the motto is Spes in Deo, which means my hope in God. My dad gave it to me in 1965 when I graduated from boarding school. But we're kind of the same person.
And that's Loudon the Second.
Right, and then Loudon the First, who I sang about in my song Half Fist.
Yep.
Is this kind of mystery man. I never knew him.
Yeah, that's interesting. It must be nice to be able to discover old relationships, new relationships. You found your way to your grandfather through music in some respect.
Well, again, I think as you get older, you become very interested in your ancestors. You know, who were these people that made me who I am. You know, not just genetically, but psychologically, and so that's I'm very into that.
I want to talk to you also about how you blend your music with humor. And I get the feeling that there's a bit of a silly streak that runs in your family. Can you talk about that a little bit? I mean, how did that get started? Not a lot of people would have the courage probably to tell some of those jokes that you told tonight on stage, and you've been doing it for decades.
Yeah. Well, you know, I love making when I was a kid, you know, and as a kid you want to figure out a way to get attention, and so I figured that I understood that I could make people laugh. You know, I goofed around and was a class clown. And they laughed, and then I thought, wow, I like this. So I've had that tendency. I mean, I also, some of my songs are more serious. And in the show, I mean, I did a lot of kind of silly stuff tonight because I think the festival, people want something kind of a little goofy. And I always do the funny stuff, but, you know, in the shows, often I'll alternate between the funny and the not so funny. I think it's a good way to keep the audience on their toes, so that they don't, they're kind of, oh, that was serious, or that's silly, or you know, whatever. But yeah, making people laugh is it's very exciting.
Was your father funny? I get the sense that he was through some of his
writing. He was very funny. He had a kind of droll, very good sense of humor. I mean, he wasn't a performer, he was a writer. But at parties and when he had a couple of drinks in him, he was a riot.
Well, you're a very good storyteller, and I'm glad that you're bringing your father's words to this new audience. I mean, not everyone has a backstock of Life magazines from the 60s, 70s, and 80s. So
yeah.
I think it's very cool how you bring that in to your music. So what's the next stop on the road for you?
I'm going home tomorrow, back to New York. And then I go to next Wednesday night, I fly to England. And I'm going to do three festivals. I'm going to do a festival in the northeast of England, a place called Aldeburgh. And I'm going to go over to Denmark and do a big rock festival in a place called Tonder. And then I'm coming back to England and playing in Shrewsbury. I play a lot in the UK. I was just in the UK a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, you're from the UK, aren't you?
No, I'm from New York. I lived in London for 17 years.
Okay.
And people often think my first name is London.
So obviously you've touched at this question a little bit, but you like to make your audience laugh and be on the edge of their seats. Why? Like, why is that important to do? Like, why is music a space where you can explore that and do that to people?
Well, you know, I think of myself, I mean, I play music and I play five guitar chords that I learned when I was 15. It's not like it's not really super duper musical. I consider myself a performer, you know. I wanted to be an actor when I was a kid. And so I'll go out there like I did this afternoon and I did 75 minutes and the whole idea is to engage the people for that time, to keep them interested, and that's my job, you know. It's a corny old word, but to entertain them. Mm-hmm. And I have a variety of tricks, you know, that I've developed over. Well, you saw them all, you know, jumping up and down and. This really was the first time that I've performed in a long time standing up. It was really strange. But the idea of the show is to engage them. So that, and that was my dream, you know, to be a performer.
Mm-hmm.
So it came true.
That's great. I want to talk about your song about Durango, Colorado. I spent a great 4 years in that town.
You were at the college?
I was at the college.
What's it called?
It's called Fort Lewis.
Fort Lewis College. That's where this gig was, in the hall there.
What year was it?
Well, now it's probably close to 10 years ago. I did a show with Leo Kottke, a wonderful guy of my generation. We did a double bill. That's when that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And it was at that year college.
So it's not Susie or Angie per se.
No, it is Angie.
Oh, interesting.
I can't remember her last name. No, it all happened. Uh-huh. And when it happened, I mean, the radio audience is not going to know what we're talking about.
Although, yeah, let's give a little bit of backstory here.
Well, so. Yeah, there is it is a bonus track if they want to go digging around.
The broad stroke.
The name of the song is called Susie. And it's about, it took place in Durango. I showed up there with my guitar in a this leather case that I've had for years. And well, first of all, I got to Durango. She ran out with a luggage cart and put the guitar up on the top of the cart. And then I watched from the plane it fall off and break. And then when I got inside, I saw that it was broken. So that I went to her and she denied it. So I left and I filled out a form. I went back. I did the show that night. We taped the guitar together. I went back and then, because Durango's a small town, she was also on duty that morning. And then we had this thing where she said, I'm not letting you take the guitar on the plane because it's in a soft case. I said, what do you mean I have to go to, I have a show to do. I have to, no, you have to leave the guitar here. And I had to. I had to leave it there and borrow a guitar. I was so flipped out and angry, but I got a good song out of it. Thank you, Susie. Thank you, Angela.
It was a good song. The audience loved it. I love the reactions to that song because I think a lot of people here performing that kind of song in a place like Lyons would probably land a little bit differently than if you performed it in the UK because so many people are familiar with Durango.
Yeah.
But it was really, really a great part of tonight's set. I also really like how apparently you have some prophecies about our political situation. 15 months ago, you wrote your Trump song. Tell us a little bit about that song. Why did you write it? Let's start there.
Well, you know, back 15 months ago when the election hadn't happened, I, like everybody else, was just kind of amazed that this thing was going on with this guy. And so I wrote this song kind of thinking that nothing would happen, you know, that Hillary Clinton. Did you notice? The people in Radio Land can't see it, but I'm wearing my Hillary socks.
Yeah. Nice royal blue with the Hillary and the forward arrow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like everybody else, or most people anyway, I thought that she was going to win. But I sang the song and people laughed and it was great and made fun of him. And we made a video, which people can actually see if they go to Funny or Die, that website. And then he won. And then I thought, oh man, I'm not going to sing that song anymore. But now I sing it. It's not quite as funny as it was, but I think it's good to sing it.
So where did your decision shift from maybe I shouldn't sing this song to let's sing it?
Well, he's so much in our lives. You know, every day it's about what's the next weird thing that he's done. So if you've got a song about Donald Trump, I think you've got to sing it.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think the role musicians have to play in our political situation at the moment?
Well, you know, I come from that generation of singers. You know, I went to the folk festivals in the 60s at the Newport Folk Festival and saw Pete Seeger and Phil Oakes and Bob Dylan when he was very socially conscious. And so I like writing, protest songs. You know, I think that it's I mean, I don't know if I think it's a good thing to do. Why not?
So you like it, but why is it important?
Well, I think it's important because it makes people laugh and think and get some riled up, get some pissed off, and you heard it. They whoop a little at the end there. So, yeah, golden protest.
Now, what would you say to people who think that artists shouldn't play that kind of role?
Who would say that?
Stay out of politics. Well, my dad, for one.
Oh, really?
I don't agree with him.
No, your dad thinks that people should just be entertained? Well, as I said, you know, I agree with him in that if you do a show and people pay money and are sitting out there in the grass, that you got to entertain them. But you can also make them think. And I don't see it as my obligation to. I'm not like Pete Seeger, you know, who was very political. I mean, I if something upsets me or pisses me off or I think is crazy, I'll write a song about it. Why not sing it for people?
Well, great. I think that might be a good place to stop. I loved your set tonight.
Thank you.
You had a good time playing for Lions Colorado. It was a beautiful night, very picturesque, as you called it.
Yeah.
I hope you come back.
Well, thanks. It was lovely talking to you.
You too.
Okay.
All right. Thanks so much. Lon Wainwright here at the Rocky Mountain Folks Festival from Lyons, Colorado. This is Paige Blank with KVNF Community Radio.
There are pictures on the piano, pictures of family, mostly my kids, but there's an old picture of you and me. You were 5 and I was 6 in 1952. That was 40 years ago. How could it be true? We were sitting outside drawing at a table meant for cards, and it must have been in autumn. Fallen leaves in the front yard with a shoebox full of crayons, full of colors oh so bright, in a picture in a plastic frame, a snapshot black and white. You were looking at my paper, watching what I drew. It was natural. I was older, 13 months more than you. A brother and a sister, a little boy and girl. And whoever took that picture, they captured our own world. Brother needs a sister to watch what he can do, to protect and to torture, to boss around, it's true. But a brother will defend her, for a sister's love is pure, because she thinks he's wonderful when he is not so sure. In the picture there's a Fender, Viral Chevrolet, or Pontiac, our dad would know. Surely he could say, but Dad is dead and we grow old, and it's true that time flies by. And in 40 years, the world has changed as well as you and I.